Welcome to Delmarva Radio Theater, a production of Delmarva Public Radio. I'm your host, Harold Wilson. Mrs. Morissette had taken to sunbathing in the nude. Mr. Morissette blamed it on those damn Frenchies. Mr. Morissette is scandalized, as is the small New England town where they live. But as tragedy approaches, Mr. Morissette gains a new appreciation of the strength and beauty of his wife. Mrs. Morissette is an original drama based on a short story by Margaret Rodenberg that first appeared in the Delmarva Review, published by the Eastern Shore Writers Association. It was adapted for radio by your host. Our featured players for today's play are members of the Community Players of Salisbury, Tom Welch as the narrator, Robert Forrester as Mr. Morissette, and Judy Hearn as Darlene. Featured as well are Delmarva Public Radio's own Cara Dahl Russell as Mrs. Morissette, Chris Rank as Reverend Chandler, and Angela Bird as Mrs. Buchanan. But before we turn to our drama, we're pleased to have the story's author, Margaret Rodenberg, with us today. Margaret, welcome to Delmarva Radio Theater. Margaret, this is a beautiful story of strength and courage. Having lived in New England, I also found it an excellent example of New England individuality and fortitude. Where did you find this story? And do you know a Mrs. Morissette?
Sometimes as an author, a character and a situation will pop into your mind almost fully formed. And that's really what happened with Mrs. Morissette. On an airplane ride home from a vacation that I had taken in St. Bartholomew Island, where this story in fact starts, Mrs. Morissette came to mind, and I pulled out a pen and paper and jotted down really the essence of the story. From there, it took months, really, I guess maybe years, to revise it and polish it into the form that it is now. But that's where it started, although the inspiration really goes, I think, back further. When I was a young teen, my family and I lived in the south of France. So at that time, I was used to seeing women of all ages and all sizes and shapes, lying half-nude on the beach. And that stuck with me. And when I saw it again in St. Bart's on vacation, I think a lot of what maybe I had thought at the time as a young person, looking at those older women, came back to me. So she really resembles, in fact, a German woman who used to come to our beach in France every summer. Physically, she resembles that woman. Emotionally, she has a bit of my mother in her. And I guess if I should admit that while it's not at all an autobiographical story, every character has some of the author in her. So I think that all those things make up Mrs. Morissette.
Well, I believe, Margaret, that's true of most writers, isn't it? We have a way of including ourselves in our stories.
I don't think we have any way not to.
Well, that's exactly right.
In a larger sense, of course, she stands for all older women or less attractive women who yearn to be sensual without fear of ridicule. And of course, without being figured as a stereotype like Mrs. Robinson or the predatory cougars who are out stealing other women's young sons. She just wants to be accepted for who she is without repressing her harmless desires.
Well, the only stereotypical character in Mrs. Morissette that I saw, frankly, is that I believe that you captured with this story the New England character spot on. Is that intentional? Did you live in New England?
You know, I lived in New England, but when I was a very, very small child. So I think that really just over the years, I've known enough people, I've traveled enough, I've spent enough time in different parts of the country to feel the difference in personalities, because there still is a difference in personalities for different parts of the country. You feel a different vibe when you're in New Orleans versus Boston.
No, that's exactly right. I wanted to ask you as well, the story Mrs. Morissette is humorous, but it's also tragic. How did you find humor in this tragedy?
I think that if you as an author you're lucky enough to love your characters, you always find the humor because that humor is a part of the humanity that we find in all of us. And without a bit of humor and tragedy, I don't know how any of us can go on. So I think that I'm old enough to have watched my own parents die, and to have been around other older people who go through the final process of life, and those that do it most successfully, I think, do feel and find a little humor in it.
Margaret, you've given us two beautiful characters in Mrs. Morissette and Mr. Morissette, and we want to thank you very, very much for that, and thank you for joining us today.
Well, I thank you very much. I'm grateful to you and to the Delmarva Review and to the members of this production for sharing her.
Thank you. And now for our drama, Mrs. Morissette.
Mrs. Morissette had taken to sunbathing in the nude. Mr. Morissette blamed it on those damn Frenchies. One vacation in St. Barth's, and suddenly Mrs. Morissette was a nudist. It all started the first day. After a hotel breakfast of croissants and lukewarm coffee, they had claimed two of the lounge chairs that dotted the narrow strip of sand between the modest Hotel Emeraude and the sparkling Baie de Saison.
Finish your coffee, my dear. You know, if you don't get to the beach early, all the good chairs are taken.
Mr. Morissette had said this during breakfast, and then again as he hurried his wife down the sandy path.
Let's move along. All the good chairs will be taken.
Mr. Morissette, glad though he was to be out of the January cold, would have preferred the direct flight to their usual condo in Miami over the 12-hour, three-flight marathon they'd endured to reach that insignificant speck in the French Antilles. Travel is hard enough on people our age without dragging us to some foreign place we've never been, he had said to Mrs. Morissette in the weeks leading up to their winter vacation. Mrs. Morissette, insisting the island was perfectly lovely and highly recommended, had bought non-refundable tickets. Now stretched out on his lounge chair, marveling at a windsurfer scoot across the bay, listening to gulls gaw, gaw, Mr. Morissette was inclined to agree. It was lovely. Since nearly everyone spoke English and their tiny suite in the low-rise hotel was nicer than what they could afford in the States, he was ready to stop complaining. He took off his sandals and anklets and, pointing his toes toward the water, toasted his legs in the sun. Down the beach was the end of the airport runway, where propeller planes bearing sunburned tourists popped into the sky. Up the beach at the Tony Hotel Eden Rock, perched on a promontory and in front of him, sunbathers promenaded, their feet washed in gentle waves. He pulled a sunglass flip cover out of his shirt pocket and clipped it to his glasses. Relishing the sight of women, young and old, slim and plump, strolling the narrow beach, breasts fully exposed to Caribbean sun, perhaps those Frenchies had it right after all, he turned to Mrs. Morissette to comment on the variety of bosom shapes.
You could do a scientific study, my dear. Something on the order of perianology, using calipers to... Oh my God!
His wife was pulling down the straps of her navy blue, one-piece skirted bathing suit. As Mr. Morissette watched, his mouth corked with horror, she maneuvered her arms through the straps, folded down the top, so that the fleshy rubber cups lay empty and open to the sky, like offering bowls on the altar of her plump tummy. Her large white breasts, breasts he, her husband of 46 years, rarely saw without a maiden form, were dangling out en plein air.
Hand me the suntan lotion, would you? Yes, a squirt should do it. Now this is something I couldn't do at home, isn't it, dear?
For God's sake, Emma, cover up! You shouldn't do that here either!
Lower your voice. Everyone is staring.
Of course they're staring! You look like something gone wrong out of National Geographic!
It's a French island, dear. Everybody is doing it.
My God! What if we run into someone we know?
Mr. Morissette peered around the beach.
Who do we know that would ever come here? I can't tell you how nice it feels. Just lovely. Do stop gaping, really, dear. You look like a carp.
Mrs. Morissette lay back and shut her eyes. Mr. Morissette stared. His wife's ample bosoms wobbled like poached eggs just delivered to the table. As they settled to rest, the nipples slid to opposite sides, giving her chest a wall-eyed look. Mr. Morissette twisted away. His temples pulsed. His teeth ached. The ocean didn't seem so remarkably turquoise, and the beach wasn't the pink the brochure promised. He pulled his golf hat down low. His eyes patrolled the beach. He squinted.
My God! That's not the Farleys!
Mrs. Morissette sat bolt upright.
Where? Where do you see them?
For God's sake, Emma, lie back down! No. It's not them. Never mind.
Mrs. Morissette lay down and fell asleep, her breasts lately pinking. Mr. Morissette retrieved binoculars from the basket and spent the morning scanning the beach for familiar faces. That afternoon, he took a nap under the hum of the ceiling fan while Mrs. Morissette walked to town. He awoke to the rustle of paper bags.
Oh, my dear, I wish you'd come with me. Rows of lovely shops, so, continental. I brought you a St. Bart's t-shirt, and for me, this pink flowery muumuu and matching bikini. What do you think? You'd never find one in my size at home.
Propped on one elbow, Mr. Morissette inspected the bikini.
Well, I'm not sure why you paid for both pieces if you only plan to wear the bottom.
That night, Mrs. Morissette didn't sleep well, and in the morning her breasts were strawberry red. She stood before the mirror, in her flowered bikini bottom, pouting. Mr. Morissette, his hand covering his smile, stared at her glowing breasts.
Better than Christmas, isn't it? A double Rudolph. You'd better cover up now.
Mrs. Morissette put on her muumuu, loaded up her basket, and led Mr. Morissette to the beach. They settled on two lounge chairs under an umbrella. Mrs. Morissette unbuttoned her muumuu and lay down.
Oh, my. The breeze feels so nice. Perfectly lovely, don't you think?
I need to go to the room.
Fine, dear. I'll wait here.
For God's sake, cover up while I'm gone. What if somebody comes by?
Who's going to bother an old lady? I'll be fine.
Mr. Morissette, staring down at the circle of the straw hat covering her face, the brim perched next to her round nipples above the ovals of her red breasts, felt his head spin. Below her breasts, his wife's body spread out wider and wider until tapering in above her knees. It was soft and lumpy, an old couch you had to know to find comfortable. There was a mole above her navel. He'd forgotten that. Notwithstanding today's standards, it was a perfectly acceptable body, but it needed to be seen. He moved his chair closer into the shade. His bladder swelled and tightened. He crossed his legs. Tossing aside his magazine, he rolled from one buttock to the other. Mrs. Morissette lifted her hat, looked at her husband. then placed the hat back over her face.
It's your prostate, dear. Why don't you pee in the ocean?
I hate to pee in the ocean. I have to swim around so it's not obvious what I'm doing. I hate to go to the ocean.
No one's paying attention. Don't be shy.
Maybe. Maybe I should just pee against the umbrella pole since we're so busy making spectacles of ourselves.
Whatever makes you happy, my dear.
Her skin had begun to peel, from the tip of her pink nose to the arches of her salmon feet. She had dragged him to the far end of the island, to Colombier Beach, where people don't wear tops or bottoms, and where she had humiliated him by swimming completely naked. He had gotten sick, eating shellfish flown in from Brittany, and he would have given all the croissants on the island for a bowl of shredded wheat. She had paid $80 to have her hair cut by a man named Christophe, who looked and smelled like an anarchist. It was time to go home. Mr. Morissette greeted the cold and the need for down jackets as a returning soldier greets his mother's chicken soup and home-sewn quilts. He walked from room to room in their little house, admiring the carpets, the bounce in their mattress, and the view of the house across the street. Mrs. Morissette, quietly peeling, packed shorts, t-shirt, straw bag, bikini, and muumuu in a cedar box. She stored it under their bed next to boxes containing her bridal gown, her mother's tablecloths, and Mr. Morissette's love letters. She went back to grocery shopping, church duties, and preparing three meals a day for Mr. Morissette. On Monday she did wash, Tuesday she dusted, Thursday she vacuumed. Wednesday nights they played gin rummy with the Delaneys. 3 weeks later, when their tans had turned as pasty as the February sky and Mrs. Morissette had stopped scratching inside her bra, Mr. Morissette began to rethink the vacation.
Yes, sir. It was a lovely, Reverend Chandler. It's a French island, you know. Very international set. Ooh, quite sophisticated. David Letterman goes there.
David Letterman. My word. No, Mr. Morissette. For me, a week in Maine is sufficiently exotic.
Oh, come, Reverend. No harm in seeing a bit of the world. Quite the reverse, in fact.
Isaiah, Mr. Morissette, secure dwellings, etc., etc. Stick close to home, I say.
Well, sir, I assure you the wife and I returned unscathed. Ah, there she is. Emma, over here.
The ladies at the library, where he volunteered from 9 to noon Tuesday through Friday, giggled over his lectures on nonchalant nudity and its effect on moral laxity. He carefully left out Mrs. Morissette's participation. Mrs. Buchanan, the head librarian, suggested he write an essay for the Herald. He toyed with headlines, St. Barth, Rousseauian Paradise, or perhaps a more populist angle, Islands, Titillations. Even strangers were not immune.
Ah, an excellent book on Morocco, madam. Travel to the exotic locations broadens one's outlook. Wouldn't you agree? Why, just last month, the wife and I...
The first 80-degree day in May, when he came home from the library, lunch wasn't on the kitchen table. Mr. Morissette found his wife on the porch. Using broom handles and striped sheets, she had rigged a privacy spot on their little deck. She lay on a lounge chair, wearing the flowered bikini bottom.
Not here! Not at home, Emma! Please! What will people think?
No one needs to look.
2 weeks later, when he caught the O'Donnell boys sneaking around, he knew the word was out. The postman blushed when encountered, and Mrs. Morissette admitted to being caught when the gas man came to check the meter. One morning at the library, filing books in fiction G to J, Mr. Morissette overheard Darlene Delaney and Mrs. Buchanan in fiction D to F.
Indecent exposure. It was the gas man, you know.
I call it moral laxity. Who would have thought?
Always nice enough, but still a little quirky.
Mr. Morissette left the library and drove straight to St. Matthew's. Mrs. Morissette wasn't pleased when he brought Reverend Chandler home, but at least she was dressed, which made it easier to talk in the kitchen while the Reverend waited in the living room.
How dare you! As if I were some Mary Magdalene!
talk to him, Emma. And at least talk to him.
Good manners prevailed. Mrs. Morissette carried coffee to the living room. Mr. Morissette, marooned in the kitchen, rearranged cleaning products. He straightened newspapers in the recycling bin, glued down a loose wallpaper edge. When he heard the Reverend leave, he peeked out in time to see their bedroom door slam. For 3 days, he made his own breakfast, lunch, and dinner, but the sheets and brooms came off the deck, and each day when he returned home, Mrs. Morissette was placidly cleaning the house or cooking. The following week, Mrs. Morissette presented him with a DVD she had ordered through the mail. Sex Over 60, the label read above a photo of a lean, silver-haired couple prancing through a meadow.
Where did you get it? I suppose you're reading dirty magazines now.
The Atlantic Monthly, if you need to know.
He tried, but it wasn't going anywhere. He turned down the lights and shrank to his side of the bed. Mrs. Morissette sighed.
You must stop, Emma. There's no telling where it will lead.
There you have it, don't you, my dear? We're in agreement on that.
In June, Mrs. Morissette suddenly began to lose weight. Mr. Morissette brought home chopped liver with carrot cake for dessert. Then early one Thursday in July, two young men drove up to the house in a red convertible and honked twice. Mrs. Morissette was fussing around the kitchen when she heard them.
Oh, that's fine for me. I'll be home late, dear.
Mr. Morissette stared out the window. The driver was leaning against his car door, wearing tight blue shorts and a flowered shirt that revealed a weightlifter's chest. A blonde ponytail hung down his back. Mr. Morissette trailed his wife into the front hall. When she took the straw bag out of the coat closet, Mr. Morissette's stomach turned.
Where did you find them, Emma?
At church. Samson, the blonde one, does the flowers. There's no need to snort. That's what his mother named him.
And why? Where are Samson and his friend taking you?
The Cape.
Any particular place on the Cape? I may need to send the police looking for you.
Really, dear, these are lovely boys, perfectly harmless. Reverend Chandler has known the Samsons family forever.
Where, Emma?
If you must know, Truro Beach.
The nudist beach? How can you... with these boys?
Not nudist, dear, naturalist. That's what you call them. Us, these days. If you get hungry, dinner's in the refrigerator.
At the curb, Samson shook Mrs. Morissette's plump hand. Leaning over to catch something she was saying, he laughed like a horse with his mouth wide open, his face turned up to the sun. Mrs. Morissette's cheeks flamed. While Samson put her bag and hat in the trunk, the other young man ushered Mrs. Morissette into the back seat. She waved as they drove away. Mr. Morissette got the map and wrote directions for Truro Beach. He gunned his Chrysler and screeched out of the driveway. 2 blocks before the turn onto the highway, he swerved into the library parking lot. When the tires came to rest, he laid his forehead against the steering wheel. Later that morning, Mrs. Buchanan, the head librarian, asked him to stop talking to himself. All summer, Mrs. Morissette lost weight. Dr. Martin, the young man who had taken over when Dr. Horn retired, stared at his desk when he talked to them. He sent her downtown for more tests. Even Dr. Lipstein, the Harvard specialist, said it was too late. Treatment would only make matters worse.
Let it run its course, Doctor. Let it run its course? She's not the Charles River, for God's sake.
Mrs. Morissette led him through the pea-green corridors to the parking lot, where he backed into another car, and curses flooded out of his mouth. From then on, every Wednesday evening after gin rummy with the Delaneys, she loaded up her straw bag. Every Thursday morning, Samson, sometimes with a carload of young men, sometimes alone, pulled up in front of the house. Mrs. Morissette put on her straw hat and walked to the curb, where Samson held the car door open. As the weeks went by, Samson met her closer and closer to the front door, and Mrs. Morissette leaned on his arm, resting partway down the sidewalk. In September, Mr. Morissette stopped going to the library, and they didn't visit the Delaneys anymore. When Sampson rang the doorbell, Mr. Morissette led him to the bedroom where Mrs. Morissette sat, propped up in bed, wearing her muumuu and straw hat. Giving her a white-toothed smile, Sampson lifted Mrs. Morissette and carried her to his car. One Thursday after they left, Mr. Morissette drove past the library, onto the highway, and took the Truro Beach Road. He found the convertible in a nearly empty parking lot. Slinking behind the dunes, he followed a path to wooden stairs leading to the beach. At the top, he crouched and peered down the beach through binoculars. Mrs. Morissette was lying flat, shaded by an umbrella, a pillow under her head. Sampson, his long blonde hair blowing loose, stretched beside her, reading aloud from a magazine. They were both naked. Mr. Morissette's knees ached, and his arms grew tired, holding the binoculars. Sweat seeped under his collar and dribbled down his back. Sampson put down the magazine. He picked up Mrs. Morissette in his arms and waded into the ocean. The water lapped at his calves, up to his thighs, then covered his buttocks and narrow waist. When it reached to where Mrs. Morissette's shoulder rested against his chest, he walked through the water parallel to the shore, past where Mr. Morissette crouched at the top of the stairs. At last he emerged from the sea, water falling from his chiseled body, and he strode across the sand, he and Neptune, Mrs. Morrison, a waif in his arms. She clung to his chest, and through the binoculars, her breasts were indistinguishable from the loose folds that hung about her torso, its skin robbed of its lovely plumpness. Slowly she curled a feeble arm around the young man's neck. Sampson bent his head and kissed her on the mouth. Mr. Morissette dropped the binoculars and ducked his head between his knees. Bit by bit, as he straightened up, his eyes traveled over his own spindly legs, lingered on his round belly, and settled on his narrow chest. He sprang to his feet and threw the binoculars as far as he could. Everyone rose as the organ began to play. The oak doors at the back of the church creaked open. The congregation gasped. Mr. Morissette, standing by the aisle in the front pew, turned. Sun poured over the threshold. The entranceway, filled with the pearl-blue casket, borne high on the shoulders of six matching golden steeds. Mr. Morissette blinked. No, not steeds, not horses. That was Sampson at the left front. Somehow he had come up with five sandy-maned friends, all his height. Their thick arms and broad shoulders rippled under gold jackets. Their waists nipped in like girls, and sinewy thighs strained against fabric. Silk shirts opened to show six bronze chests glistening with golden chains. No one in the church breathed. Down the aisle, Mrs. Buchanan looked as though her head might pop. As the young men advanced toward the altar, Samson's lips spread into the most beautiful, shining smile Mr. Morissette had ever seen. Mr. Morissette looked into the sea of disapproving faces and returned Samson's smile with a grin so wholly inappropriate for a wife's funeral that the entire congregation sucked in its breath and wives clutched their husbands. As the procession passed, Mr. Morissette's fingers brushed the blue casket.
Perfectly lovely, my dear. Perfectly lovely.
Mr. Morissette reached for his wife's hand, but found only air in the pew beside him.
Dearly beloved, we gather this day to honor...
Henry Morissette bowed his head and wept.
Thank you for listening to Delmarva Radio Drama. We'll be back in a moment with a new play based on an original story. I'm your host, Harold Wilson.